What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of the number one sports pack podcast in Southeast Metro Detroit. It's Teaming Up with CNV. I'm your host, Connor, the C himself, as always, with my co-host, the V, the man, Vladimir. What's going on, man? A day later than our normal recording date, but some good stuff to talk about today.
Yeah, I'm a little irritated. I'll get into that. We had a pretty entertaining work scenario today where the fire alarm went off in the middle of the storms, and we kind of had to go walk outside in the pouring rain. And then 15 seconds after we get it in the pouring rain, everyone gets the Amber Alert of tornado warning, Sterling Heights, get in a sheltered area. And so we kind of had the pickle of, do you die by water or do you die by tornado?
Fire.
Fire, yes. So that was an entertaining dilemma that we had. We never actually found the fire, which was strange because like it wasn't a scheduled drill and it wouldn't go off if there wasn't something that they thought was a fire, but kind of an entertaining time. Other than that, I'm doing well. Ended up at a Tigers game last night. Was the first Tigers game I think I've been to in maybe 8 years.
Wow.
Good time though. Very good turnout for a Tuesday night against a bad team with like no stars pitching or anything. So I enjoyed myself, but yeah, that's me. How are you?
I'm good. And that I hope with tonight's game getting rained out, they're gonna play a doubleheader tomorrow, and I hope we do get a Skuball Skeens. We were not supposed to. Skuball was supposed to throw tonight's Skeens tomorrow. And obviously, they can kind of pick. I'd assume they're probably going to pick the games they're not pitching against each other out of the two. But,
Cowards.
anyways, I'm good. Not much has changed in my life over the last week, so I don't really have too much to report. Yeah, there was a tornado in Fraser, I think I saw. So that's actually not too far.
I heard there was one in Royal Oak.
Oh, really? It was not. That's interesting because it was not bad at all. Like it poured for like 15 minutes and then it was nothing. Granted, I'm not technically in Royal Oak, so maybe it was a little more north Royal Oak. I don't know. Where I've also heard the worst is coming tonight too. But that's also going to be, well, I'm in Northville right now, so it's going to be northeast of me a little bit. But, and I think I heard Macomb County, which is north of you too. Where is that related to Rochester? I don't even
Macomb
know.
is east.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But anyways, we got a lot of sports topics to talk
We
about
do.
today. We've got the Stanley Cup Finals ending last night. We've got the NBA Finals kind of closing in. It's 3-2 right now. We've also got the US Open. Speaking about weather, the weather and Oakmont caused some havoc on Sunday. And then we're going to talk some soccer and some miscellaneous kind of NBA stuff and some trades that have happened in the NBA and in various sports. So let's get into it. I guess I can start, or we'll start with the US Open. We usually start with the golf. JJ Spahn wins at Oakmont in kind of a flurry of, what I think was six or seven names on the leaderboard there. He's the only person to go under par. He kind of caps it off with this great run. I believe he was plus five before the rain delay.
Yeah.
And was one of two people to go minus par after below par. Minus par sounds dumb. Below par after the break. And the other one was Rob McIntyre, who came in second there and really had a good bid for it at the end. I don't know. JJ Spahn's a guy that has competed a lot more over the last probably 2.5 years here in events. I believe it was his first win in X amount of years. He took Rory to the playoff at the Players this year, and just kind of had some key moments down the stretch when everyone else kind of imploded. We could talk about like different people's implosions. Tyrrell Hatton on that par three, where he just kind of took three shots to get out of a bunker. You had the Sam Burns in the water issue, I believe, on 16, 15 or 16. That was basically hit the end of his round. Adam Scott made bogey after bogey down the stretch. And then JJ Spahn makes that huge out on 15. And I believe 17 and 18, he went birdie, birdie after the drive of his life on 17 to about 20 feet. And then 18 being, I believe he was in the rough too, and making that putt after Victor Hovland kind of gave him the line there. It was fun. You kind of, We got that US Open weekend you were asking for in terms of the score wise. Maybe a little or a decent amount of that was contributable to the weather. But overall, I was pleased with it. It was actually really fun to see kind of just carnage. I feel like you don't really see that. And it was a weird event where it wasn't just the last group or what it ended up not being the last group at all, but or the last two or three guys, but it was a myriad of guys, and you really didn't know who was going to win it until the last, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of it. So I it was the most I've been entertained by golf in 2025.
I need to hold my hands up and throw an apology to Oakmont. I was not familiar with your game. The 2016 U.S. Open at Oakmont was a little before my time at as a golf fan, so I did not realize what this course was, what this course does to people, and kind of when you mix in the weather and some of those puddles, especially with how much it was raining and some of those effects, it just became kind of the double trouble, if you will, specifically for Sam Burns, like you say, and getting his round ended af after asking for relief from multiple different people, and then
How
going
quick
to
was that?
what?
It's like, no, I'm sorry. It was just crazy how quick it happened.
Yep.
Like it was
Yeah.
boom, double. Okay, he's done.
Yep. But yeah, it was pure carnage. Like you said, it was awesome to see guys kind of look like us out there. I understand that they're not us, and we would do 200 on that course, not
On
80.
Sunday, yeah.
Yeah, and it's cool to see the duff chips going from rough to still rough, bunker to rough because you're afraid to go long. Kind of the it was entertaining. And to be fair, to kind of switch it, I don't know if you saw Scotty got asked a question of like, what does he think about everyone loving how hard they make it? And he gave a really good answer where he goes, golf is this weird sport where it's like, I don't want to call it like a fetish, but he goes, it's borderline the only sport where it's like celebrated when the guys suck. He's like, nobody ever says, oh, I hope these basketball players can't dunk, or I hope this guy's going to miss some threes, or the guy's going to miss a catch. He goes, but in golf, you guys love it when we sit there and we suck. So I thought that was kind of an entertaining viewpoint from the player's side. Not that they don't or that they shouldn't be protected from this, but it was just a question he was asked, I think, in preparation for whatever travelers or whatever tournaments on this upcoming weekend. But I thought it was unique. Like you said, it was.
I would argue you could argue the complete other side of that though. Like, there's no other sport where you just root blanketly for players without any like backing or alliance like that. You know what I mean? Like, you root for one team in other sports. You root for a list of golfers or a certain amount of golfers in golf. I don't know. I understand that like his argument, but I also think it works the complete opposite way at a lot of events too.
But yeah, it was just entertaining time. Like you said, at one point you had a, what is a five-way or six-way tie after I think it was Burns kind of came back down to earth, and you're looking at six guys at plus one, a couple others at plus two, three, and like they kept showing Scotty's kind of
I was
the
gonna.
ending of his round. And well, if he could have made some putts today, or if he could have made some putts this weekend, he would have been in the mix. And it's like, I get it, but he's not making them, so he's not in the mix.
He had a chip on, I want to say 16, 17, or 18, where they're like, well, if he makes it was he was like 30 yards off the green, and they're like, well, if he makes this, he'll only be within two shots of the lead. It's like they were acting like it was a four-footer for him to go down and on like 18 with a
Oh,
shot
he
off the
had some
tee.
issues with four footers. I don't know if you, it was like he missed like six or
He missed
seven putts within
20 or
five
something.
feet. It was, but that's not the point. I guess if I have to be the generational complainer that I am, I got very annoyed very quickly with the commentators, how everything had to be here at Oakmont. Here at Oakmont, the rough does this. Here at Oakmont, this happens. Here at Oakmont, we have the best beer. Here at Oakmont, there's a turnpike that goes through our course. I don't know if this, like, if you picked up on that, but every single sentence had to end with here at Oakmont, or start with here at Oakmont, we test the players. And it got very repetitive very quickly.
I don't know that, like, what is August? What is like the Masters do?
Maybe they do the
And
same thing. It's
the
just
players tear the Masters up now.
I noticed it at an absurd level.
Yeah,
It
okay.
was almost like they were like required to tell you where they were every single time they had a detail about the course.
And another thing about the US Open that I just thought of is it's kind of turned into the, I think I said it in the preview of how I thought it had to be one of the big names because of how hard it was going to be. But because these are usually harder events and usually you're not seeing a double digit below par number, is it's kind of turned into the major that's the most winnable for the randoms. I know Bryson won it last year, but Wyndham Clark won it the year before that. I know Matthew Fitzpatrick was a top 15 player in the world for a while, but that was short-lived. You can kind of consider him a random at this point, in that there really kind of have been some random names fit in terms of we've talked about in past episodes how it's kind of gotten chalky. Is now that this event is no longer is the least chalky of the four, I think, so far. And the other one going off that point with the big dogs is Rory McIlroy had an all-time just poopy pants weekend with all the club throws and I just me and him. His quote was so the quote I saw from him was basically strange. Of it was essentially now that I have the Grand Slam, I don't really care about anything besides the Open in July.
Yeah, I didn't see that specifically, but I don't doubt it. He's not that it takes a lot for him to sour on me because I hate him with especially the live whatever antics we don't need to rehash that, but like you said, he had smashing tee boxes, throwing clubs, catching clubs that came right back at him,
That was
not
awesome.
talking to media continuously. I was whatever, you know, let him prepare for his Ryder Cup on foreign soil, which he wants to win so badly. But yeah, that was a very bad showing. You are correct.
And to kind of finish off, we haven't given really anything JJ Spawn. Funny JJ Spawn story that I heard. He was like feeling really bad. This is like pre-COVID for like this like 2017 area. And so they thought he had type 2 diabetes. So they're like, oh, like you gotta like get in shape, yada yada yada. He loses 50 pounds, and apparently he just this is now like 2021. And apparently he started feeling even worse, like got super sick, like all this stuff. So they went back and they found out he doesn't have type 2, he has type 1 diabetes.
I
So
did
the
see that.
dieting was working the other way for him. I thought that was, it shouldn't be laughing at such a serious health condition, but I thought it was
It's funny because he's healthy. There's no harm, there's no foul. We laugh at it.
funny.
Yeah, I did see that. That's entertaining, which is the one where it's like your body produces too much insulin.
Type 2 is type 2 is usually triggered by you getting fat. Type 1 is the one you can't control.
Okay. They didn't really answer my question, but neither of us are
I
medical
don't
professionals, so.
I too the too much one I don't know, because
It's like
usually
one's
type
not
one,
enough, the other one's too much.
yeah, I would assume two, that's two then.
Sure. You won't hear a dissenting
This
opinion
isn't a
from me.
science podcast.
No,
This is not
we need to
science.
move on to the NHL Stanley Cup
Yeah.
Finals because we're talking about diabetes right now.
Yeah. On to the hockey. We have for the second year in a row a Stanley Cup champion named the Florida Panthers. They take down Edmonton in six games. And basically, since we talked, it was just two ass kickings Saturday night and last night. Saturday night, a little better game. Edmonton kind of had some fight there in the second or third, cut that thing down to 3-1. What does Florida do? Immediately scores, gets it up to four. Marchand, five goals in six games this series, was just a dog for him. And then last night, I gave up on this game at 4-0 or 3-0, so like it was third period, because it was just every loose puck, every battle, Florida was in it. Florida was winning it. They just came in waves. Edmonton had no answer. It was a flurry of shots, flurry of chances. The first 5 minutes, I looked at my roommate who I was watching the game with, and I was like, Edmonton looks like Edmonton's getting their way here. We might get this. I was rooting for Edmonton. And then the next 35, or sorry, 55 minutes of the game was nothing but Panthers. Bobrovsky played great all series. They were able to dodge some close comebacks in the overtime games, and they were just kind of the best team the entire playoffs. Other than going down 2-0 to the Leafs, requiring them that seven game series, they won in 5-5 and very dominant six, I would call this. They were the best team throughout this playoff. Sam Bennett wins the Conn Smythe. He has 15 goals in 22 games. He only had like 26 in the regular season, and that's in 80 games. He had 15 and 22 in the playoffs. Free agent. He's about to get paid. And then this team, I've said, is just full of their best players being dogs on both sides of the pucks and rats and hard to play against. You have Barkov. Reinhardt scores 4 goals in that game. He's one of the best defensive forwards in the league too. Matthew Tkachuk was playing with a hip abductor that was off the bone. That came out today. He's a champ, two-time champion again, warrior. You pick up guys like Brad Marchand, veteran leadership to play on your third line. You grab guys that were in not so good situations like Seth Jones to bolster up your back end. And they were just the most complete team. And there was no doubt in I think anyone's mind, while they may have not been the best team in the regular season because of injuries, that come playoff time, it was going to be them. Some fun facts. It is the sixth straight Stanley Cup where the Florida team has been in it, and the fourth one that a Florida team has won it, because Tampa went back to back and then lost in the finals, and then this was Florida's third year in a row in the finals, and then their second win. So hockey's great in the Sunshine State. They actually showed out pretty well, I thought, in that last game in terms of fans and people sticking around. It is one of the greatest like trophy. I watched it the next morning, obviously. This morning, it makes me super. It's like the one that I actually like, kind of like get emotional about, because it's just a cool tradition of them passing the Stanley Cup to everybody. One of the most iconic trophies in sports. And for you can argue that this team in the future is gonna stick around. I think they will. Tkachuk signed to a long deal. Barkov signed to a long deal. They just signed Reinhart, all to relatively team-friendly deals. Where this cap is gonna go. You are going to have to sign Ekblad, Marchand, and Sam Bennett are the big free agents. I think if you're able to get two of those three, and it's, yeah.
I was going to say they can also keep cheating the salary cap with the long-term injuries.
They haven't done it quite as badly as like Vegas has, but yes, they've definitely taken advantage of it too. And now what they're complaining about is like they signed Tkachuk a couple years ago in that sign and trade for like 9.5 when he was asking for like 11, and that guys are willing to come and take like $1 million or 2 less a year because it's A, nice there, and B, there's no state tax.
Yep.
And so now people are complaining that the cap needs to be adjusted for state tax, which
Oh, come on.
it's like I get it, because it's like Toronto, $9 million is the same as like 11 and a half, 12 million in, or sorry, other way around. 11 and a half, 12 million in Toronto, your take home is about the same as whatever, 9 million in Florida. So I get the argument, but it's like, come on. Like,
That's just stupid.
it's also just like cheap owners. Like
Yeah.
the salary cap's not even $100 million right now. Like, you're fine.
Yeah, Steph Curry's going to be on a contract making more than the entire salary cap here soon enough. And it's like, yeah, that's,
Exactly.
I didn't know that there was people complaining. Like, so it's like, this has existed in every sport ever. Every single time an NFL player chooses the Dolphins, it's not only, yes, Miami's probably a better city than wherever he came from, but yes, it's important that the money's there. I don't see people throwing fits. Oh, we need to change this, not fair. I think that's funny.
It is, because it's like I said, Tampa went back to back 2021. And then you have Vegas in there, and then now Florida again. And so 3 of your last 4 winners have been no state tax teams.
Dallas
So that's
Stars. No state tax there, and they keep making conference finals.
keep their team chugging along. Yep. And then on the other side for McDavid, I mean, it's just a matter of will he win the big one? He's this kind of all-time great. I've sung his praises. He's everybody's gonna go down as, top. I think he could retire today and be probably a top 15 player ever, to be honest. And and he's probably only halfway there, at 28 years old. But he had some interesting comments about how he wasn't really worried about what their team's going to look like next year. I mean, he's now in what, probably, I think it's year 10. He joined the league in 2015, or what? So year 10 without a cup, and They didn't supply him with a starting goaltender this year. The back end really let him down. They have a lot of older players. Corey Perry's likely not on done with his career. They have some guys they need to sign Bouchard as well. And then he's going to be a free agent next summer. So I think it's kind of a matter of he gets to wait this summer out, decide what he wants to do. And if he wants to move on from Edmonton, he has to kind of make that clear because a guy like this needs to be signed this summer. That's how these kind of superstars work. They don't get to, January without a deal. The best player in hockey is not going to get to January without a deal. So you're going to find out very quickly whether he wants to stay an Oiler or not. And I go back and forth on it. I saw some suggestions of like he should just kind of like pull a LeBron and take 2-year deals until he finds a team to win because like he has to win one. It's just like the best player of this generation has to win a cup. And whatever the curse is here in Edmonton, it's not working. I know he likes Leon. I know they've gotten there. They're now in the last 2 years a combined 3 games away, but we'll see what his future is. And I think you'll pro my gut tells me you will actually probably see him not this upcoming season, but the year after in a different uniform. So that's the Stanley Cup Finals. That's the recap. That's the NHL season. There's no reason we should be talking about it on June 18th or whatever it is, but here we are.
To the NBA, since we last spoke, games 3, 4, and 5 have gone on. Game 3 was awesome to watch as kind of that person who's rooting for the Pacers because they kind of won a game they probably shouldn't win, and it was led by some TJ McConnell just energy plays, including intercepting 4, if not 5, inbounds passes from OKC because they just blindly threw it into someone, assuming that it's like entitled to them. It's just promised to them that there's not going to be anyone there. And I watched that, and like I said, from a fan perspective, I loved what TJ McConnell did, but from a fundamental just thought process, if you're a basketball player and you take an inbounds pass and you don't look where you're throwing it and you just assume that your guy's going to be there and the other guy won't, and you give it away, you deserve to be benched and you should have part of your salary taken from you because that is an unforgivable mistake. You're given 5 seconds to inbound in. This is situational. I'm not talking about when they've got you in the corner and all five guys are in your face. I understand that's a little different. But when they've just made a basket in the second quarter and the other team's point guard just wants to be funny and stand there and you just throw it to him for shits and giggles, you should lose part of your salary because you're not thinking. And that happened again, just TJ McConnell 4 or 5 times. He had one of the all-time great spurts. I think it was about a 3 or 4 minute spurt where he was probably solely responsible for like a plus 15 point turnaround, and none of those points were actually scored by him. It was all assists. Super cool to see, or just like steals. The Thunder kind of took a page out of the Pacers book where they just turned it over all night, like just like it was cotton candy or whatever. Like they didn't value the basketball, and they cost him a game. Game 4 was funny because it was kind of, I think Game 4 is the best game the Pacers have played as a team, and it's one they lost. They kind of sat there. They were the ones who controlled the game for most of the night, unlike the rest of the games. And then at the end, they're the ones who did the collapse, where the Thunder are able to kind of just pull away at the end and end up actually covering, which I was talking to somebody who bet, and he was like, "It's funny, the Pacers are up all day, and I've got Pacers my or plus 6.5, and then suddenly I blink and they lose by 7." So all-time bad beat there, but that was Game 4. That was kind of I think that was the Pacers' chance to kind of put that stranglehold on the series. They didn't take it. They go back 2-2 to OKC, where they've lost home court. And I thought from there, that's kind of where they mentally got beaten. Game 5, similar to their first 3 games, Thunder controlled it, forced turnovers, played suffocating defense. And as always, this Pacer team somehow finds a way to get back into it. I think they brought it down all the way to either 2 or 4 points in the fourth quarter. And you're like, oh, here we go again. These guys are going to do it. Here comes Halliburton on another crazy shot. And they kind of locked back in on defense, brought the lead back up to 15 plus, and took care of Game 5. I think right now Tyrese Halliburton is he's dealing with an injury, and he's actually, I think, doubtful for Game 6, which To be completely honest, the way he's played this series, that actually might be advantage Indiana. I know, and I don't mean this in a bad way, because like I've sung his praise of how clutch he is, but he is genuinely the most role-playing star I've ever seen in my life, where he gets all the headlines because he makes the last shot, but he is awful and he's a passenger in all of these games. This is not some, oh, he had a bad day. It's pass first. There's no shooting. I mean, he had 15 points in the first 2.5 combined games of the series. It was diluted. I actually think he finished game five with 0 points total, on 0 for 5 shooting. You can't be a star and put up 5 shots in 48 minutes. I don't care if you're hurt or not. You need to be the guy who's scoring points. So it's really for the Pacers. It's been the Pascal Siakam show. And I think when I broke it down, I kind of said, you know, the Pacers are really outmatched at every avenue except for Pascal. And I kind of assumed that he just wouldn't be enough to turn the tide, but he's been great. On the Thunder side, Jalen Williams has been their best player as well. So I'm not just gonna unfairly shit on Haliburton. Shea's kind of been anonymous at times. And if we're going by certain finals MVP voting standards, assuming the Thunder win game six or game seven, Jalen Williams should be your finals MVP, not Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. But we'll see if whoever the voters or the league sees it the same way. But he's gotten progressively better and better every game, dropping more and more. Capped it off with, I think, a 40-point performance in game five. He has been incredible. They run this really cool two-man game when it matters with Shea, and it's been fun to watch. They've been good games. I know it's not a hyped series, it's not a marketed series, because the NBA doesn't really do that anymore, but the basketball has been good. I guess another thing that was kind of entertaining was NBA Twitter. If that's what we're gonna call it, has successfully bullied the networks into showcasing NBA Finals introductions. So for Game Five, they showed the intros with kind of the MC in the arena, and they said that that was the first time they had aired intros for a Finals game since 2013.
Really?
And so it's like, that's just people have been complaining. They've been complaining about the court, the fact that the Larry O'Brien trophy's not on the court. They've been complaining about that. They basically said, you've got the NBA Finals and it feels like a regular game on a Tuesday night in January. And there's been enough pushback that they're starting to take notice. And, you know, and they finally kind of said, hey, put the damn intros back on TV. So that's a start. Maybe next year we can get the trophy on the court, but.
Well, and there was like the no. Like, no, I know people were complaining about the no logos on the floor for the finals. People were complaining about that with the hockey, and then they put like the because it's usually like right under the blue lines, and they put like a TV one, like the TV one on it. It's so interesting. It's interesting you bring that up because I noticed that just myself between the two after the first game. So but I hadn't dove in enough to see that other people were complaining about it too.
In terms of other basketball stuff, that's really the finals. You had the Desmond Bane trade kick off, kind of your what's supposed to be the summer of fun, with a potential Kevin Durant move, a potential Giannis move. Now that the Grizzlies are potentially tanking, maybe you see a Jaren Jackson or a Ja Morant trade. So this should be a very active offseason for teams who are trying to kind of compete. This kicked it off. He's a good NBA player who's going to give the Orlando Magic something that they haven't had in probably 10 to 15 years. It gives them a really good core four: Paolo, Franz, Jalen Suggs, Desmond Bane. I think that's sufficient in the East, because the East sucks. You know, maybe they run into an Indiana Pacers predicament where maybe they trip and fall their way to the NBA Finals, and they just come up against a team that has better players. But that's a pretty good problem to have, as being one of the last two teams playing. They immediately, I think, are in a contention for an Eastern Conference Finals, and so be it, or in, by that definition, a NBA final spot. The price is kind of, I think, what the biggest thing is. They paid four first round picks and a pick swap, and then you kind of had the classic salary matching with KCP and Cole Anthony. And I was just telling you beforehand, I know sometimes we hear those numbers and it's like four firsts, five firsts, three firsts, and our head immediately goes to like the NFL equivalent of, oh my God, they're giving up first round picks. Like, look at these psychopaths. And it's just like, once you get to the 20s, nobody cares.
Yeah.
Is it a lot of, is it a lot? Sure, but that's just what the market is. I mean, we said the same thing when Rudy Gobert went for five first round picks 2 years ago. We said the same thing when Mikal Bridges went for four first round picks. It's just, that's the price to try. That's the price to contend, and that's the price to pry away a good NBA player from another team. It is what it is. It's unfortunate. It's an inflated market, but that's just how it is. People are worth what they're willing to pay, and the Magic were willing to pay it. So Desmond Bane is worth four first round picks. I think the kind of where we go from that is you have the Magic kind of setting the market for this kind of rotation, as I just said, where let's tie this to the Pistons. If the Pistons are in the market for another guy, because, can they run it back again with this young group of guys and improve? Sure. Jaden Ivey comes back from a broken leg. That's an improvement for a team that didn't have Jaden Ivey to end the year. But if you're trying to compete at the highest levels, you probably have to look outside the room. And you probably have to look at that next, or that like second or maybe even third tier of star, like a Desmond Bane, like a Domantas Sabonis, like a Lauri Markkanen. I just said the name earlier. Maybe Jaren Jackson Jr. is available because Memphis wants to hit a full reset, maybe not just a soft reset. So I think to tie this into a local team, the Pistons now know where the price starts to try and contend, and we'll see if they're willing to pay it. Or
Kevin
in
Durant.
what?
Kevin Durant.
Kevin, I don't know about that one, and I don't think he'd want to come to Detroit.
I don't think he'd want to come to Detroit. I don't know. Like, do you want, what is he now? 37, 38?
37, 36, I don't know. But that might be one where even I turn my head and say, no, thank you, man. I'm
Yeah.
out.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, the thought of that, but.
Just imagine how like self-righteous we are saying no to Kevin Durant, the top
I know.
15 player of all time. And I understand he's not what he was 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. He's, the Achilles injuries, they hurt, they slow you down. But it's still Kevin Durant.
I
He's
know.
still he's 6'11" with a good handle, and he's unguardable.
And
Even
you're still the team that took, like, what was it, 15 years to win a playoff game.
yeah. And here I am saying no, I don't want this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's entertaining. But yeah, that's the basketball. I'm sure there will be many other kind of just random weeks where we tune in and it's like, holy crap, KD just went for this package, or oh my God, Giannis is in the West playing with Victor Wembanyama. That's crazy. And we'll see what happens. We'll see the shakeup. We'll bring it up as it shows. And this was just the first one. That's the basketball aspect. Do we get to soccer?
Soccer, it is.
Yeah,
Tell me about
so
this World Cup
yeah,
in
the
nine
FIFA Club
countries.
World Cup is currently ongoing in the United States. This is a reimagined and expanded, my two least favorite words when we're talking about sports,
Yep.
version of a tournament that previously existed, which was there for the continental winners. So you'd have your Champions League winners, they would play the Asian Champions League winners, they'd play the CONCACAF Champions League winners, they'd play the Oceania ones. Basically, they had some 6-7 team tournament where
Yeah.
basically the European team was always going to win because they were just exponentially better. That tournament was the name was taken and it was basically reimagined. That's now called the Intercontinental Cup, and it still exists in pretty much the exact same format. And they took the Club World Cup, they took that name, they expanded it to pretty much what a World Cup used to be, because starting 2026, it goes to 48 teams. But this is a 32 team World Cup, eight groups, four teams apiece. Your qualification goes, if you're a continental winner over a set 4 year period, I believe those 4 years were 21 through 2024, you would get automatic qualification. And then afterwards, the kind of the at large spots, if you will, to kind of use a college football term, would go to the teams that had the highest coefficient rankings within their kind of continents ranking systems. And they limited, specifically for Europe, they limited how many teams could go to or from each country. So I guess maybe a prime example of a team that I think should be here based on the ranking system is Liverpool. However, because Chelsea and Manchester City won the UCL in 2021 and 2023, they already took the two qualifying spots for England. So Liverpool could not go. They got bumped. I mean, Real Madrid had an automatic qualifying, and then Atletico Madrid got the second one. Barcelona, I think, are back into kind of that top rankings where they should have gotten an at-large spot, if you will, but there were already two Spanish teams. They couldn't go, and so on and so forth. So you are missing some of the big teams, but that's effectively what it is. From there, it's just a classic, you know, you play each of the teams in your group once, go to a knockout stage. It's a World Cup. But for club teams, that's kind of the objective overview of it. Now, maybe I'll talk a little bit about how I view it, why I think it's stupid, and we'll talk about the actual games eventually. It's just right now in the group stages when you've got teams playing nobodies, like Bayern Munich played against a team from Oceania, I think, where they couldn't even bring their whole team because they're all part-time players and some of them couldn't get their PTO requests approved or something, and they've got forklift operators and whatnot. So it's just like that level of talent discrepancy is just outrageous, and the group stages are just not going to be, barring some catastrophe. And you know, Real Madrid's well on their way after dropping points today to the Saudis, but that's a super team. So, you know, that was a quality draw for us. But basically, I think that this tournament, and I've ranted so many times to friends, so I'll try and keep it quick. Right off the bat, the players need rest. It is just ridiculous that now three of in a 4-year cycle, you're going to have 3 of the 4 years with major tournaments that completely kill the players' ability to rest. Because you obviously have the World Cup, you have your Euro slash Copa America years, and now you have this in between those. And you are basically saying the what happened. This is a prime year. So the UCL final was 2.5 weeks ago. Then the teams had to go to international duty because they had to finish the Nations League. So players had to play two or three more games. Then they came back to their club teams. Now they're going to play 6 or 7 more games. And then this is going to end in the middle of July. And then they're going to get home. They're going to have about 1.5 weeks of rest before they need to go back to their club teams to start their preseason. And you're running out of space. And especially with these top European teams, because those are the ones that play all the games. Those are the ones that go deep into the domestic cups, the intercontinental tournaments, the UCL and whatnot. Real Madrid have played every 3 days for the last 8 months. That is unsustainable. You cannot do that to the players. It is unsustainable. They're dead mentally, physically. So from a player aspect, I hate it. These guys need to rest. And yes, I understand the flip side. Oh, they're playing a kid's game for generational wealth. I understand that, and I do want to sit there and hold them to a standard of you are a professional, and if your job says you have to go work, you have to go work. I get that, but you cannot run these guys into the ground and not expect there to be a decrease in quality or a decrease in just how they perform. So from that aspect, I hate it. I thought this was a pretty good point as well. I brought this up to friends, is from a fan's perspective, they need rest as well. Like, so far, one of the big problems has been the fan turnout sucks. And I understand some of these games are at noon or 3 o'clock on a weekday, and the majority of America works. But there's no traveling fans either, the way you would typically associate with a World Cup traveling to go with your teams, because how the everyday person cannot afford to go to Euro 2024 slash Copa America 2024 and then show back up to the United States for Club World Cup 2025 and then show back up to the United States again next year for World Cup 2026. They don't have enough money. You're pricing out the everyday fans, you're pricing out the people who bring your atmosphere. So that's been a major problem so far. And in the soccer world, everyone likes saying, oh, well, that's because it's happening in the US, and the US isn't a soccer country. And it's like, I don't think that's the case, or at least not the major driving factor, because the United States has 330 million people. You might say there's not a large soccer presence, but if you tell me one fifth of the country cares, 60 million people is still more than most people have in their countries. And they don't all care about a sport. So this idea that there's nobody here who watches the sport, I think that's wrong. It's just, people need a break as well. I mean, to an extent, I think we're gonna start seeing it with football when you play every single day and Christmas and Black Friday and Wednesdays, and now we have to do Saturdays when college is done, because why not? There's only so much attention, there's only so much time and money people have to dedicate to something. And I guess the organizers and the money hungry people are going to abuse that until the bubble bursts. And I guess it's up to the fans to be the ones to burst that bubble. But that part I hate. And the other thing that I think just kind of tops it all off is I kind of mentioned a little bit about some of these teams that are not here. You just don't have global teams. You look at if you look at look the, if you look at these tables in your ESPN or whatever app you pull up, the global teams, quote unquote, there's five of them. It's Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, Man City, Chelsea, and then PSG to an extent. That's it. Which means 27 of your 32 teams, nobody gives a shit about, or they just don't have enough of a global fan base to be able to travel.
Right.
So I think that this tournament, where, yes, I'm sure they'll have some fun games in the knockouts when you have the European teams playing each other, but I think from a perspective of optics and kind of what you would typically associate with the magic of a World Cup, or the unity and togetherness of all the fan stuff, the way you had last year at Euro 2024, you're not going to get that. And people are going to view this as like a failure on something. It's too much.
I don't disagree, and I think you make a lot of good points just from a general sports fan thing in general. I was nodding my head a lot to what you were saying, and I didn't want to cut you off because I was like gonna agree with you, and then you kind of said what my next point would have been. And I guess like the only way I see like it stopping, because you don't, unfortunately, like with TV deals now and the fact that you can watch a game from anywhere now, not that that like hasn't been the case for a while now, but like that's where the real money is unfortunately for these teams. So like they're gonna keep doing that while they can get like it's still on like Fox Sports and stuff like that, this tournament, like relatively good TV deals for this
So
event.
this is actually funny. Yeah, it's on a combination of a couple things. So every game is streamed free on DAZN, or however you say it, which, first of all, DAZN in 2025 is a hilarious concept. But like they have some of the games on like the TNT networks. So you mentioned about TV deals and about money. This tournament, I was doing some reading, is pretty much entirely being financed by the Saudis, because this is their version of a down payment to be awarded the 2034 World Cup. So everything here is like they know they're going to lose money up front, but then they're going to be awarded a World Cup and they're going to get the tourism boost 8 years
Right.
from now. So that part's very funny. I didn't even realize this, 'cause like I said the same thing. I was like, what are games doing on DAZN in 2025? Like that was like a
Right.
failed boxing promotion launch from like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And then I read more into it, and it was like, oh, the Saudis invested in DAZN. The Saudis are paying all this money. It's like, I think it's up over $1 billion just to kind of, like you said, bankroll this through TV deals. And like you said, that is where the money is. Like, yes, tickets are one thing, and fan kind of attendance is one thing, but that's not where the money is. That's not where you're
Yeah.
truly increasing your value, and that's not where you're in kind of just making your money. So
Well, and
it is
it's
what it
like the
is. And
excess thing you talk about too is, will the product ever reach a point that a fan is willing to not watch their team play more? I think it's possible, but I think it's so hard in our, I mean, the NFL is the greatest example of this right now, right? They just kind of seem to do more and more every year. And little by little, they've convinced us that that's just the norm. And unfortunately, like we're such a excess, everything's got to be exponentially more than the next thing society, that like, will it ever, I think it's just really, really difficult. And that like breaking point or that bursting point you're talking about is actually just such a really high number for us to refuse to watch more because of the quality of play.
sure, and I don't even think it's more about a watch factor. It's just like it's the stadium. Like, I think a prime example from all the games that have happened so far, one game has been sold out or viewed as close to sold out. That was Real Madrid today. And that's just due to the fact that you had the biggest team in the world playing. Like, Bayern wasn't able to sell a game out,
Yeah.
Man City couldn't sell a game out. I mean, I was talking to some friends who went to the Chelsea game in Atlanta on Monday, and they said that there was maybe 20,000 people in the football stadium. So you had a stadium that holds 70,000 people, and you've got 20K in there. And to be honest, that actually might be a success because that game was at 3 o'clock on a Monday.
Right, I
People
was
had
gonna say
work.
that I feel like 20,000 is
That
relatively successful.
might be viewed as a success, but then the problem is, what are you doing hosting it in an NFL stadium? Because you just have bad optics. Like you had right away people, like I said, and this is just people trying to score points online, but right away you had clips surfacing on Twitter, and it's like, here we are, seconds to kickoff of Chelsea match, and look at the stadium. There's 10,000 people here. This is so bad. The US sucks. And it's like, dude, people work.
Right.
But that's still the optics that you see. You see empty stadiums. I had a friend text me the next game after Real Madrid ended. They start right away in a different arena. And he goes, there might be 60 people in the stands for this game. And I'm like, I'm not shocked. So.
The other thought I had is with the play, I'm from the player side. Is without knowing international law, and it's obviously very complicated because there's different laws in different countries. Is
Yep.
do they collectively bargain? Like, are they part
No.
of unions at all?
No,
That's
they
that
are
could
told.
that's why that could never happen in America.
Yeah. No, they it that is something that one of the Real Madrid players used to kind of say this, and he goes, look, man, like nobody consults the players. They just tell us, oh yeah, you're going here now. Oh, the Super
Right.
Cup? That's actually in Saudi Arabia now, and you have to play an extra game for it. Go.
Yeah.
And they don't really even see an increase in their
Hey.
salaries. Like
Yeah.
I'm not trying to tell you that these guys are struggling on ramen because they're not. They're creating generational wealth, but this is my prime example. The highest waged players in Europe are your couple players at Real Madrid, a couple at Man City, whatnot. They make like 25 million a year. That's Tyler Hero money.
Right,
And
right.
it's like, really? This is like, I'm sorry, but Kylian Mbappe and Tyler Hero do not equate to equals in their status of their craft.
Right.
But there's just like all these clubs just sit there, and these cartel organizations like FIFA and UEFA just sit there, create more tournaments out of thin air, and don't actually give any of this money back to the players. It's
Right.
just pocketed.
And that unionizing thing is a purely capitalistic American thing
Yes.
that is out of the players' hands for whether a country could ever adopt that. And
Yeah.
it'd be so hard to do too, because like you said, I know the league, the domestic leagues, but like there's so many of them and so many good ones in Europe that how would it be fair if they get to if they're not going to play and stuff because they had bargaining power and they got to negotiate that they get July off or it's interesting dynamic that I just thought of, but.
Yeah, no, it is. I think if they can, I mean, I'll say a prime comparison. This is a 32 team Club World Cup. The World Cup next year is a 48 team World Cup. I would be shocked if the next iteration of the Club World Cup in 2029 stays at 32. I would be shocked. I
See,
would.
that one surprises me though, because it's like you can have qualifiers for that. And do we really want to watch like Trinidad and Tobago play Italy in the World Cup?
Oh, we're going to.
I know, but like, I don't, that part I don't get. And that kind of got, now I'm kind of like contradicting myself because that's your college football playoff argument. But.
And then it gets worse because then after Trinidad plays Italy, Trinidad then has to play against, I'm trying to pick a proper, Trinidad has to then go play against China. Nobody cares. Like these
Right.
teams suck. And so is what it is. We'll see how this turns out. Maybe I'm being a little too pessimistic on a tournament that hasn't finished yet, that's barely gone through 4 days of its existence. But I think you're gonna run into problems, and you're going to see a bubble burst. I mean, I think FIFA also overplayed their hands. They've slashed ticket prices like six or seven different times because I don't know if they just expected the entire world to like be waiting to show up to this thing, and they just didn't think about the fact that, hey, unlike the national teams, all of these teams' fans just watch them play an 80-game season. Why would they need to go watch them play again?
Right.
So, is what it is. But yeah, that's the Club World Cup. Like I said, I think for next week and maybe the week after, there's not going to be much to say just because it's still the group stages. Once we get to the knockouts, maybe I'll be a little bit more inclined to talk game by game just because it should be mostly the European
Competitive.
teams playing each other and competitive. But these guys are dead. Like, I watched Real Madrid today. These guys can't run. You've got, they're playing in the blistering heat. And to be fair, it's hot for both teams. But
Right.
all these South American, another thing that I'm on a rant now, so I might as well go on. Was people were talking about how the South American and kind of the Saudi teams and basically all the guys that did not just finish a 70 game season have looked very, very good. They're like, well, I didn't expect the quality gap between the Europeans and the other guys to be this little. And it's like, maybe because all the Europeans just played 70 games in the last 8 months and all of the other teams are coming off of a winter break.
Right.
So
How many games do they play in that Saudi league?
I mean, I don't know what the answer is, but it's like it's more of just like a how it's structured. Like prime example is MLS. You've got a couple MLS teams in here that are 15 games into their season. They just get off a winter break where they have their kind of off season. They're coming in and they're basically pausing MLS to play these games.
Right.
So it's like
Interesting.
it's a lot easier to look more energized after you just took a 3 month vacation. Same with the South Americans, you know, they start in February, but it's like they play in the Mickey Mouse League before they get to the real league in the summer and then the late fall. So
Yeah.
it is
The
what
answer is that team you played today has played 35 games.
not bad. Yeah, I mean, I would need to see when that is because like if that's
No,
35
like you
games,
said, you're right. Yeah.
if that's
I was just
35
curious.
games since December or 35 games since whatever it might be, like there are obviously stopping points to it, but yeah,
Yeah.
it's. It is what it is. It was a good game today. The other team has this guy who sees our jersey and just decides to turn into God every single time he plays us. He used to play in La Liga, so I as soon as I heard his name out, I got flashbacks and he did it again. But yeah, that's the Club World Cup, so.
Yeah, I don't really have, I mean, Tigers wise, since we last talked, they lost the series over the weekend to a very okay Reds team. But like you said, one game won against the Pirates yesterday. Baez is back, two home runs in that one. Baseball wise, the biggest thing that's happened is Rafael Devers, the Red Sox guy, got traded. I thought it was dumb. I mean, the Red Sox are in the middle of they've won six of their last seven. They're two games above 500. They're like right in the wild card race. I know it's still really early. They have a pretty solid young core of pitching. And like they just signed Bregman for all that money. They gave Devers that big contract 2 years ago. I don't know if there was still beef because Devers said he wanted to still play third. Obviously, Bregman's a much better third baseman. So he's been playing third and has had a good season as well. And Devers is DH the whole year. And I don't know if that came to a boiling point where he basically just said, trade me. I don't follow the Red Sox day to day like that. But a move that didn't really make sense for me.
I saw that he has no problem playing first base for the Giants.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. He moved to a team that, like, the Giants are good at a playoff, like, much more of a playoff team. But I don't think they're that far off. Devers is in his early 30s. It's not like he's 40. So it just didn't make a lot of sense for me personally.
You want to hear my
And I
theory?
know, yeah.
And I think I joked about this. I don't know if it was in our group chat or if I,
Yeah, it was with the
yeah, or
Fenway
I messed
Sports
with like the
Group.
Boston, some of our Boston friends, but it's Fenway Sports Group, which at least from the soccer front with Liverpool is notoriously cheap. And this summer they've spent a lot of money. And maybe it's just the fact that they realized, well, we can't pay Devers and all those transfer fees.
Right. I genuinely wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it's a massive con. It's like a 30 million per year for the next long time contract. So it's a big multi-hundred million dollar commitment they gave to him after they just Bregman for whatever, 180 million.
Yeah, so
So
I think that's everything, right?
that's everything. That's all the sports for this
It's
week.
not bad. I mean, we got an hour out of this. I'm kind of proud of us. I think this will be the longest episode since maybe the football season's died down. So if you've made it this far, thank you very much. I hope you agree with all of the bullshit we just spewed, and I will leave everyone off with a go Tigers.
Yeah, stay safe in the storm, folks. It is pouring outside my window right now. See you guys.